This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
How does a strong and growing economy lend itself to job uncertainty, debt, bankruptcy, and economic fear for a vast number of Americans? It's a question that I personally am grappling with right now whenever I hear some economic news. How in the world did we get into this position? And one of the folks who's helping us understand this question is David K. Johnston. He is an investigative journalist for the New York Times and a best-selling author and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. And he joins us on the long line to talk about his new book, Free Lunch: How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Coy.
Thanks so much for joining me. I've really been looking forward to this.
Well, thank you for having me on.
So what was, tell me where the book came from. What are you, you write about these kind of things for the Times, but when did you know that you had a book here?
Well, back in 1995, I talked the editors of the Times into hiring me to see if there was a new way to write about the tax system by covering what the government has done as opposed to what the politicians say. And 4 years ago, I had another best-selling book called Perfectly Legal about the tax system. And when I was out giving lectures and whatnot about that book, people kept saying to me, well, I keep hearing in the news the economy's doing so well. How come I'm not doing so well? And that's when I decided to start looking at the other side of this, which is subsidies and government rules that affect the flow of money in the economy. And the fact is that since 1980, our economy has done fabulously well. More than half the wealth created since the beginning of the Republic has been created since 1980.
Wow.
Per person, yeah, it's quite a pretty good record. And per person, adjusted for inflation, for every dollar the economy put out in 1980, it puts out $1.70 today. And yet the average income of the bottom 90% of Americans, as reported on tax returns, is virtually identical today to what it was in 1980. It's $7 per person, per taxpayer, different. In fact, the average income of Americans as measured on tax returns peaked in 1973. So we've had an entire generation, more than a third of a century, where we haven't gone anywhere for those at the bottom. Those at the top have done unbelievably well. To be in the top 100th of 1%, that's the best off 30,000 Americans today. That's a tiny group. I mean, a country of 300 million people, 30,000 is not very many people, and yet that group of people has more than 5% of the income in this country. Their average income has risen from about $3 million back in 1980 to an average income of over $25 million per year today. And because of rules that allow very wealthy people to delay reporting their income, in some cases for decades, that is, you earn the money now, but you don't have to tell the government about it for decades, the real numbers are actually very much higher. The average income of the average income of the top 25 hedge fund managers is $11 million a week.
Every 7 days.
Yes. And by the way, the tax rate that they pay on that income is the 15%. That's what janitors pay on the margin, a 15% tax rate. School teachers tend to pay a 25% rate on the margin. Police officers, newspaper reporters tend to pay a 25% rate on the margin.
And I find all of this just unbelievable. Like, how did it get this way?
Well, so
the premise that you're...
Which is, well, if the economy's done so well, how do we end up with this? Well, you know, the distribution of incomes does not occur in a vacuum. It is influenced by the rules that the government sets. And what I do in Free Lunch is show, through the stories of individual Americans, some of whom got very wealthy, some of whom were ruined, some of whom were venal, some of whom are little heroes who did the right thing, that the government has changed the rules and has put in force all sorts of rules that shift risk off of various wealthy people and onto you. And perhaps the worst rules of all are the ones that allow companies you don't even do business with to reach into your pocket and take money out of your pocket. Or if you do business with them, they may be able to take money from you that's a tax and keep it for themselves.
Amazing. We're talking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston, of the New York Times. His new book is Free Lunch. And so we have this new, over the last generation, then, government has rewritten the rules where risk in our country and this economy has been socialized, and yet much of the gain and the profit has been privatized for a very, very small number of people.
That's right. And let me give you my favorite example is the wealthiest family in America are the Waltons. They are the controlling shareholders of the Walmart Corporation. They are worth more than $100 billion. As a family, they are more than twice as wealthy as Bill Gates. Well, if you go shop at many of the new Walmart stores, and by the way, this is also true at many Cabela's, Bass Pro's, Home Depot's, Target's, lots of the big box retail stores, you take your purchase to the cash register, you're charged the sales tax. That sales tax never goes to the government. These stores have made deals under the guise of economic development and job creation to keep the sales tax. And in many cases, they are also exempt from property taxes for a period of years, typically 7 to 10 years. They take the sales tax you paid and they use it to pay the cost of buying the store. Now, there are two ways to look at this that are important. One is the reason that your kids aren't getting the education they need and the police department doesn't have enough officers and the parks aren't being well maintained and the libraries have pretty much stopped buying books is because large amounts of money are being diverted through these devices, which the news media routinely describes as tax increment financing. I mean, would you have a clue if you read in the daily paper an article that says tax increment financing, that this means that the owner of the store get to keep your sales taxes or don't have to pay property taxes? The second part of this, Coy, is imagine that you owned Coy Barefoot's department store. You started it up with your own money, you pay taxes on it, you reinvest in your business, you're making it grow, and suddenly the local city fathers come along and they offer a deal to this huge national corporation, Walmart, Cabela's, Bass Pro, any one of these companies, that they don't have to pay the property taxes you're paying, and they get to keep the sales taxes to finance the construction of their store to compete against you. Can you imagine?
Yeah,
that's going on all over the country. And one of the stories I tell in Free Lunch is about a guy named Jim Weaknecht, who owned a little store where he sold hunting and fishing gear and outdoor equipment. He made his living by always underselling Cabela's, the big national firm. Cabela's comes to this little town of 4,000 people in the Poconos in Pennsylvania and talks the city fathers into giving them $36 million through this sales tax and the property tax exemption. And he says, you know, if I'd gone to City Hall and said, give me $1 million subsidy, they would have laughed at me. But they gave him this money. It's more than the entire city budget of this little town of Hamburg, Pennsylvania, for 10 years. And guess what? The big national company with the big national subsidy ran him out of business, bankrupted him. And in the 3 years that I write about in the book, that Cabela's was a publicly traded company, so we know what their profits were, they made a profit of $220-some million. And they made subsidy deals for almost $300 million. So they're really not in the business of selling goods. They're in the business of reeling in tax dollars from your pocket.
We're talking with David K. Johnston of the New York Times. His new book is Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense. David, we often hear, you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. We're very proud of the strength of our economy. We all worry and fret both for, you know, at a micro and macro level when it's not doing well. But at the heart of it, it doesn't sound like we have a free market economy. It sounds like one that behind the scenes is a very small number of people and big corporations are pulling the strings, and they are playing by different rules than the rest of us.
Right. Well, one of the things I do, Coy, is I cite Adam Smith, along with the Bible and Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Mellon and other authorities. But Adam Smith warned that Adam Smith wrote, seldom do members of an occupation gather together, even for merriment, but that the conversation turns to a conspiracy against the public to raise prices. That gets quoted a lot of places, but here's what he went on to say that's really important. By no measure of justice or liberty may government prevent such voluntary associations, but neither should it help them. Well, when the National Association of Manufacturers has its annual meeting, or the United States Chamber of Commerce, which represents big business, not like your local Chamber of Commerce, when the Farm Bureau, when any of the big national groups like that get together, who do you see on the podium speaking? The presidents of the United States, vice presidents, senators, cabinet secretaries, governors. The government facilitates these meetings in all sorts of ways. And what we have created are not free markets. And there really is no such thing as a free market. I mean, everything has rules. But we've actually created markets with rules that inherently drive prices up. And I show in the book a brilliant experiment done by a computer scientist who was trying to test the question of whether these new electricity markets that we have, you know, Virginia just decided to get out of this area, whether they would produce lower prices. And he found, as soon as he set up a market that met all the standards of, seemed to meet all the standards of neutrality, that prices within a few rounds of bidding were headed towards monopoly prices. And he did four different versions of this, and in every version, prices headed towards monopoly, 70 to 90% of monopoly prices. Well, an economist, and I'm not an economist, but I studied economics at the University of Chicago Graduate School, an economist would look at that and say, well, there's probably collusion going on. The sellers are getting together and they're fixing prices. The problem is that in this experiment, there couldn't be any collusion because the buying and selling was done by software agents, simple little computer programs that a smart teenager could write. And the reason is that the design of the market drives up prices. Well, in the electricity business, the rising prices in the states with quote-unquote competitive markets, markets that were designed by a company called Enron, have driven prices so high that General Motors joined hands with its arch nemesis, Ralph Nader, to protest that these aren't really markets, they're faux markets. And in Free Lunch, I show you that there are faux markets, there are markets that, in, by their very nature, overcharge you and benefit a narrow group of people who got the government to write the rules the way they want, often with little or no news coverage, or news coverage that was entirely misleading because the reporters listened to what people said the rules were, they didn't read the rules.
The book is Free Lunch. We're talking with the author, David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. David, tell us a little bit about the Hilton family. We're always seeing news about Paris Hilton, and I had thought that they had all their money because of hotels.
Well, you would think that, given their name. Conrad Hilton, who started the Hilton Hotel chain, was a very devout man. And when he died, before he died, he revised his will 32 times. And in every revision, he gave less and less and less money to his children, particularly his son, Baron. Well, even before he was dead and his will was to provide that all of his fortune from the Hilton hotels was to go to the poor children of the earth, Baron Hilton was working on a scheme to divert that money into his own pocket. Within 10 days of his father's death in 1973, he put this plan into motion to divert the money to himself. He was turned away at every venue. He had courts turned him down, the Internal Revenue Service turned him down, the state of California's attorney general got in and fought him. I wrote about it as a reporter back in those days for the Los Angeles Times, exposing what was happening. But finally, one day, one court, a court I describe in another chapter in my book as well, gave him a ruling that muddied the waters. And as a result, he then got to keep 60% of the income that's supposed to go to poor children and control of the Hilton fortune, most of that fortune, until he dies. So the day before my book was published, Baron Hilton announced, I'm leaving 97% of my fortune to charity when I die. Well, that's because he was required to. But the diversion of money has already totaled more than a third of $1 billion. And in all likelihood, before Baron Hilton dies, he will have diverted $1 billion that's supposed to go to the poor children of the earth into his own deep pocket, thanks to the government.
And that's money that Paris Hilton spends to go party and get on the news.
Well, I certainly would much rather have a grandfather with $1 billion than the negative 5,000.
Amazing. Hey, we're talking with David K. Johnston. The book is Free Lunch. Absolutely fascinating. Before we go to a local news break here at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to, David's going to stay with us. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. But before we break, tell us, if you can, about President George Bush and how he made his money.
Well, President Bush, who will go down in history as the biggest tax-cutting president of all time, even though Bill Clinton signed a bigger tax cut bill than he did for the super, super, super rich in America, owes his fortune to a tax increase that was funneled into his pocket. President Bush, who was a oil and gas tax shelter salesman and very unsuccessful at it, put together a group of investors who bought the Texas Rangers baseball team when it was losing money. His investors were all wealthy enough to build their own baseball stadium. But instead, they arranged to have a special election held on an odd date in January. Very few people turned out. They voted to raise the sales tax. The sales tax increase was used to finance building a new stadium and seizing the land of a whole bunch of landowners through government's power of eminent domain. One family, by the way, fought back, and a jury awarded them six times what everybody else got per acre for their land. Six times. When they sold the baseball team 9 years later, the increase in the price was about $164 million. Well, the subsidy, according to the public records and Ray Hutchison, who's the husband of Republican Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas and is a friend of George Bush, the subsidy was over $200 million. So every penny George Bush got from that deal came from the taxpayers. He did not add a dollar to the value of the team. Only the taxpayers did. And President Bush has always said, well, this is a win-win situation. Everybody won. Well, the vast majority of people in Arlington, Texas, have never gone to a baseball game. They paid higher taxes to make him rich and his fellow investors rich. Little children who use their money from their allowance or collecting bottles or mowing lawns or babysitting to buy whatever they want to buy paid a higher tax, and that money was funneled into President Bush's pocket.
So they used public money then. They increased taxes, used public money
That's
to
right.
build a stadium for George Bush's baseball team in Texas, which, when it had its own brand new stadium, made the team more valuable. So they flipped the team with this new stadium that the public had paid for and basically made all this money that had been totally created out of thin air based on an increase in taxes.
Well, it wasn't created out of thin air. It was created by taking it out of the pockets of people, many of whom never go to a baseball game. And then when President Bush filed his tax return, I have his tax returns, he made them public. He misreported, to be kind, on his tax return, his income. He claimed that all of the money he made was the capital gain taxed at 20%. In fact, he had a 2% share in the team plus 10% that was paid to him as his compensation for being the general manager. That's a very common arrangement. And he reported that as capital gain. So instead of paying 39.6% tax rate plus payroll taxes, Medicare tax of another 3 or about 42% tax rate, he paid 20% capital gains rate and saved $3.4 million. And his own financial statements show that at least two-thirds of his net worth derives from this deal, and therefore about 15% of it derives from his not fully paying his taxes.
Best-selling author David K. Johnston. The new book is Free Lunch. David, stay with us.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Let's rejoin our conversation with David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, best-selling author with the New York Times. His new book is Free Lunch: How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. David, you know, here we are in Charlottesville. We still talk about Mr. Jefferson all the time. He just comes up in conversation. Is this not exactly what Thomas Jefferson was so afraid of, that a very wealthy few would grab the reins of power, change the rules for everybody, and just enrich themselves at the expense of the rest of us?
Well, certainly that was one of his concerns. And one of the problems I think we have in our society, and I say this because I've lectured at colleges and universities and some high schools all across America for 10 years on the subject now, is there's an astonishing number of young people who, when I ask them, what was the reason that we created this country? I'm astonished that I get students who say, well, so we could get rich. We created this country so we would be wealthy. And I say, no, go read the preamble to the Constitution. We created this country so that we would be free and we would govern ourselves. The Constitution talks about commonwealth. It does not talk about narrow wealth. Now, it's wonderful that lots of people are getting rich and prospering in our society, and that's terrific. But that's not the reason we created it. And if the only reason people come to conclude that we created the country was to get rich, the first time we have a serious economic problem, we'll be heading down the road where our descendants will sit down in high school and read a textbook that begins with the words, "The United States of America was."
Amazing. David, was there anything in your research, and like you say, you've been writing and researching and speaking about this stuff for many years, but right. I'm curious, for this particular book, was there anything you came across that was really shocking to you or really surprising to you?
Well, yeah, one thing particularly hit me, and everything in Free Lunch, comes out of official government documents or corporate documents, okay? But one of them I was astonished to find out is over the years, as I've moved around the country, I bought, I think it's 7 or 8 houses. And every time you buy a house or you refinance, you have to buy title insurance. I don't think most people know what it is, but, you know, you sit down the first time to buy a house, they put all those pieces of paper in front of you, and it's $10 fee for this and $25 for that,
oh, yeah.
Sign this and initial that. The big charge you face is the title insurance. It adds typically 0.5% to the value of a house. So a $200,000 house, it'll cost you $1,000. Well, it turns out that 90% of the money you pay for title insurance goes for kickbacks and referrals. It goes for basically illegal transactions that are known under the law as commercial bribery. The actual cost of the insurance that you're buying is less than a nickel, and if we didn't do this retail, that is, if the banks bought the title insurance because that's whose interest is really being protected, and they bought it wholesale, the cost of these policies would be maybe as high as $25 per mortgage, and that would that's a possibly a high figure. And one of the it looks like, if you look in the phone book, that there's a vibrant market with lots of title insurance companies. 90-some% of the business of title insurance companies is done by 5 companies operating through lots of different names. And one of these companies went after an insurance commissioner in Colorado who was being honest and forthright in her work because it was going to cause them trouble. I tell about, from their own emails, this Machiavellian plot they set upon to get the news media to stab her in the back. And as a result of this, the insurance commissioners in several other states conducted investigations. They all found this massive program of kickbacks and commercial bribes. And then what did the regulators do? They said, well, the solution to this is we need an education program. We need to make sure that the insurance companies know that it's illegal for them to be paying for business. Well, if those programs had any effect, the price of insurance would have dropped dramatically, and it hasn't. And that we have a system that makes you pay absolute minimum 10 times what you need to pay for something, and our government looks the other way as crimes are committed in every single purchase of a house in the United States or refinance of a house is a perfect example of how government has become estranged from the people who gave it its power to exist.
David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, best-selling author. The new book is Free Lunch. David, let me ask you, we were talking in the first hour on this program about the healthcare system in America, and tell us what you learned about our healthcare system here in the States.
Well, McKinsey & Company is the largest, most prestigious business consulting firm. Every one of the Fortune 500 companies has probably used McKinsey at some point. And they did an analysis and concluded that we have the most inefficient, ineffective healthcare system in the world, that we waste so much money on just paperwork that it's the functional equivalent of every American getting up in the morning and lighting a George Washington and burning it, and on Sunday burning 2. And what I show in Free Lunch is that this system arose in part because we as taxpayers gave money to capital to start up and build nonprofit HMOs, health maintenance organizations, which the Oval Office tapes show President Nixon embraced when he was told that the way they make a profit is by denying care. And he said, fine. Well, there are people who ran these systems who were then allowed to buy those assets for pennies on the dollar, and in one case, a tiny fraction of a penny on the dollar. They're all billionaires today. And one of the unsung heroes I write about is a guy who could have done the same thing. He could have put tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in his pocket, and he didn't do it. And yet in the new town he lives in, the news media every year report on his pay. He makes over $1 million a year for running a $4 billion HMO. And everybody thinks he's a pay pig. And I asked him, why didn't you do this? You could have taken all this money. The government would allow you to have an unbelievable fortune. And he looked at me and he said, because it would be wrong. Because it would mean my wealth at the expense of people's health. And every one of these HMOs, when they change from being a nonprofit or in some states a charity to a for-profit business, the very first thing they did was announce that they had reduced their medical loss ratio. And if you're a reader of the business pages, you've seen that. Newspaper will say, da-da, health insurance company has reduced its medical loss ratio. And then they'll quote stock analysts as saying, you should buy this stock because they've reduced their medical loss ratio. Well, what that means is that a smaller portion of each dollar you paid for your health care went to your health, and a larger portion went to make people wealthy. The model we have of health care as a business just doesn't work. And the CIA, which does lots of analytical work, publishes a report examining health status all around the world. According to the CIA, the health status of America, the healthcare system in America, by many important measures, ranks below Cuba and down with countries like Croatia, not exactly places we think of as leaders in the world economy.
But we've been made to, every time this comes up, when it comes, you know, when they talk about the government having anything to do with healthcare, we hear, oh, that's socialized medicine, which, you know, already our troops have socialized medicine. But, you know, that aside, we hear that this is a very bad thing and you should go to Canada and it's horrible. Anywhere you go, it's if the government has anything to do with healthcare, it's just horrible.
Well, first of all of our government officials have socialized medicine. One in seven Americans doesn't have health insurance, and it's costing us enormously in both the efficient deployment of human capital and in the competitive world market. We just lost a huge factory to Canada over this very issue. Nobody talks about socialized lifeguards. Lifeguard service is socialized. When you go to the beach, if you start drowning, the lifeguard doesn't look at a piece of paper that says, oh, well, let me see, Coy's policy covers him on Tuesdays if the sun is shining, but this is Wednesday and it's raining. Sorry, you get to drown. We don't talk about kindergarten insurance or road insurance or police insurance. Now, we did at one time use the same model for fires that we now use for healthcare. You, Coy, would hire an insurance company to fight fires at your house, and I would hire another. Your house catches on fire, my fire company gets there first because they're nearby. They won't do anything because your house isn't covered by the policy, so your house eventually makes mine catch on fire and both our houses burn down. And we realized that was stupid. So you know what we have in America? We have socialized fire protection. Some things are just more efficient and effective. If this worked as a business model, I'd be the first guy to say that's terrific, because in addition to being a reporter for the New York Times and employing people who work on my books, I'm the chairman of the board of a little business, a little hotel management company. And so trust me, I understand business. It doesn't work. It's costing us far more than it costs our competitors to have their healthcare systems. And it is damaging us in the world economy because we're pursuing this path. And here you have, just you'll see in Free Lunch, abundant evidence that what we've done is created a system of a bunch of billionaires who got there by denying health care to people who paid for it and reducing the quality of their health care. That's how they get paid.
The book is Free Lunch, and the author is David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, best-selling author with the New York Times. David, it's been an honor to talk to you, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Coy, very much.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.